It's not a matter of fault.
Hello, everyone. Pamela Zero here. Welcome to Duck Duck Goose, a podcast about the Visitor series. This episode includes Chapter 2 and some Q&A. Thanks for coming along on Duck's journey. Chapter 2. Elenin. Then, Earth. Elenin turned her car left into the grocery store parking lot. Her golden blonde hair was piled perfectly on her well-formed head, and her blue eyes took in the chaos of the lot calmly. She had been a beauty queen when she was in her teens, and while she was just past 30 now, she had been born into a family that prized appearance and youth. She liked to think she was not considered past her prime. She found a spot and eased into it, coming to a gentle stop and reaching for her purse on the seat beside her. She grasped the handle of her purse, and suddenly the air got cold, and everything went pitch black. She was still conscious. She could feel her heart beating. Panic started to rise. She tried to focus on her breathing. In a distant way, she wondered if she was dying. She tried to remember if she had turned off the car. Elenin could feel her feet land on something, and vertigo rushed in, then faded, tipping her up so she was suddenly standing in the dark. It was freezing cold, and there was the sound of water dripping. She gave a half scream when a light flared, then screamed in earnest when she saw what the light revealed. Elenin found the cards the third week she was in the darkness. She was not 100% sure it was the third week by Earth standards, but she had tried to establish a rhythm in the pattern of food and pain that made sense. She was exploring the wall as far as her chained left hand would reach, more in an effort to keep her mind busy than with any real hope of finding a way free. Her fingertips were sore and raw from inching along cold, wet stone, but there was enough awareness through her pain to feel a small niche in the wall, about the height of her shoulder. There was something shoved into the space, and she twisted her wrist awkwardly to pry it out with her numb fingers. Her right hand was chained downward, pulled tightly across the front of her body. The logic and sequence of her immobilization seemed to have no rhyme or reason, but she carefully noted each different restraint in her mind, calling on skills honed by spending years memorizing pointless but charming babble for pageants. She could feel the object give a bit, and slowed her left hand's movements, suddenly terrified that she would drop whatever it was. It slid out finally with a bit of a tearing sound, and she squinted in the near darkness to see what it was. It was a cloth bundle about the size of her palm. There was something inside the cloth, but there was no way to open it safely with only one hand free. The real problem was how to hide it. So far, her captors had made no move to take anything from her. Her right hand still clutched her purse, the muscles long since cramped in place. Her ornate hair clip remained perched on her now ratted hair, and her summer dress was torn and covered in dirt. They had taken nothing, but they had added things, fixed things. Her eyesight was better for one thing, and the ache in her leg from a horse-riding accident at 13 was gone. The biggest change was a second skin they'd added, like a micro-thin bodysuit. It was mostly yellow, with shifting green splotches that moved slowly around her body under her tattered dress. Elenin was not quite sure that she'd kept her sanity through all the pain, and the skin suit was one of the things that made her doubt her mental health. It seemed that if she concentrated, she could shift where the green blotches went. One morning, she had woken with the skin stretched completely over her entire body, covering her head. She panicked a bit, but then realized she could both breathe and see just fine. In a few hours, it retracted, leaving her hands, feet, and head uncovered. Since that morning, Elenin had worked on trying to move the green blotches around, as well as trying to get the bodysuit to cover her hands and feet. Inside the suit was warmer, and it seemed to repel water. Having her hands and feet encased would remove some of the pain and unending cold and cramps in her extremities. With the cloth package in her hand She realized the best way to hide it would be to keep it in her palm and cover her hand with the suit, trapping the bundle inside. She closed her eyes and slowed her breathing, pulling from memory the calm voice of the fellow on the TV that was always pushing meditation as a way to heal everything from crow's feet to lumbar pain. She kept her eyes closed and imagined her left hand covered with yellow, stretching the suit in her mind to hide the bundle in her hand. Ellen opened one eye to check and saw no change in the suit. She took a deep breath, closed her eyes, and tried again. She had until they came back to hide the bundle, and while she didn't actually know how long that would be, she did know that trying would keep her mind off whatever would happen next when they did. She lost track of time. Food was brought randomly, light seemed to turn on and off sporadically, and she no longer seemed to be of interest to her captors. She spent hours focused on her skin suit, eventually making it cover different parts of her body, and finally moving the green blotches around at will. The chains that had bound her were removed for no apparent reason one day, and Elenin stood as still as she could, trembling as the blobby beasts took them away. She stretched silently as long, cramped muscles tried to work. She lost her balance and fell onto the cold stone floor. She managed to get her legs out in front of her, then started pointing and flexing her feet. Her body tingled and burned as circulation returned to all her limbs, and within a few days, Elenin could move with ease. She remembered the bundle she had found, and was finally able to unwrap the cloth covering. It was a set of cards. The cards were old, worn, and stained with who knew what. They seemed to be made of a stiff, greasy plastic. Each card had a picture of a being on one side, and what seemed to be text and small images of the same being in various poses on the other. There were 24 of them, though she couldn't tell if they were numbered or not. The language was completely unfamiliar to her, with oddly shaped letters and the text laid out in some sort of grid. Whether to read the text top to bottom, left to right, or vice versa was unclear. The beings in the images were way outside Elenin's knowledge as well. A few looked like humans, others looked like characters from sci-fi movies, and a few were simply unrecognizable as living things. Each card had a colored border, with a symbol up in the upper right-hand corner, and a section of text below the picture. She was aimlessly shuffling the deck, making up stories about the different beings pictured, when a gaunt woman swung down from above, shoved a small child at her, and then disappeared back up into the shadows. Elenin grabbed instinctively at the child and pulled her close. The girl stared up at Elenin in terror.
"It's okay. It's okay. You're safe. Safe and warm. It's okay."
The child pulled away from her and started to squirm.
"Oh, honey, it's okay. I won't hurt you."
The little girl couldn't be more than 4 or 5. Elenin smiled as gently as she could and relaxed her grip. The child held still for a moment and peered at Elenin in the dim light.
"Mama?"
Her tiny whisper broke Elenin's heart. She swallowed tears as she answered,
"I'm not your real mama, honey, but I can be your second mommy while we're here. I'll be your mommy too, okay? Mama too?"
Elenin nodded, tears streaming down her face.
Tiny arms were flung around her, and Elenin found herself holding the child, murmuring nonsense reassurances as she peered up into the blackness.
Osei, now, the temple. Osei walked with purpose through the main entrance hall of the temple. The entire complex was more like a small city, but anyone that wanted into the vast network of rooms needed to come through the main doors and this echoing great hall. He had spent his morning in the offerings department searching out induction pictures for the last few dozen groups of offered to arrive. Unsurprisingly, the child seen last night in the cafeteria was not in any of the images. Undaunted, he went back a full 6 cycles, but still no picture. His next stop was the library, where he could at least research what race she was. She was bipedal and seemed similar to an entire swath of beings around the galaxy. However, while he was familiar with a number of races,
He couldn't identify her particular ancestral planet of origin. Her facial structure didn't quite match any other he had seen. But then again, the galaxy was a rich and varied place. Whatever she was uncommon. He knew Sai was upstairs in their quarters, methodically documenting every scrap of information about the child, and sketching out what words fell short of expressing. Fran, now, burst in. Fran sat still, letting her breath slow, and keeping her eye on the pile of rubble before her. There were bots designed to make repairs tucked into random stones, and she had to catch them quickly before they started to reassemble the wall she had just spent the morning ripping apart. The air around her was ice cold, and she felt her sweat quickly chill. She had been destroying the prison lab for months now, and was used to the freezing conditions. Back when she had been pulled through, she had gone into phase unwittingly as she tried to escape the monster that had caged her. Now she could control when and how deeply she shifted out of normal time and into phase. This was the last level of rooms above ground. In the next few weeks, she would tear down the rooms around her, removing everything that was not stone, burn it, and then work methodically to tear down every stone wall and remove every floor. Mounds of rocks, some of them twice Fran's height, surrounded the remains of the complex. She had demolishing for a few months in real time now. Fran knew that it might take a year or so to finish, depending upon how deeply the room sprawled below ground. She thought of herself as alone in her work, but surrounding the piles of rocks and half-destroyed walls of the complex was a lush jungle full of living things. Quite a few of the jungle's residents were sentient. One particular race of tree dwellers had noticed her efforts and had decided that she was another monster, like the beings that had lived in the complex before. Some argued that she was a different kind of monster, a balancing monster, there to destroy in order to bring stability back to that little bit of land. Time would tell which one she was. Fran unwrapped her hand coverings, checking her skin for breaks and bruises, and savoring the short break. She had been in phase for a long time now, and everything was numb. How far deep she'd gone into phase was something she tried not to think about. Tearing down a wall without any sort of useful machinery was a long-term project. She grimly got back up onto her feet, alternating between dread that she would find him and fear that she would not. She took another swing at the stone with the pickaxe. She'd found the worn tool leaning against one of the outer walls, with a small bag of nuts and dried fruit next to it. She watched the odd tableau for a while from a distance, shifting into real time to make the observation go faster. Apparently someone or something had noticed her working and approved of her task. It might also be that they feared the sudden appearance of a gaunt, pale-skinned, bald woman wearing a skin suit the color of the stone walls around her, and wanted to appease her with an offering. She doubted the locals knew about phasing, and her sudden appearances and disappearances had to be disquieting. Fran still found phasing unnerving herself. She looked at the bag in her hand. The nuts reminded her of Duck, who was always hungry. She smiled to herself, then grimaced as she remembered the first time she saw Duck. Fran had been carefully crawling through the tunnels in the ceiling that passed for air ducts, checking on the prisoners and trying to figure out how to get out of the maze of rooms and hallways they were in. A small voice, singing in a breathy whisper, had caught her ear, and Fran worked her way around until she looked down and saw a small, human body. For a moment, she hoped and feared with such intensity that her hand closed too hard around the pipe supporting her, and it squeaked. But it wasn't him. The form was too small. The features were wrong. This looked like a girl, an emaciated child strapped down flat on her back on a metal table, with some sort of IV hooked up to her arm. Clearly in pain, but focused enough to be exploring as much of the table as her hands could reach. Fran had pulled all the way out of phase and lowered herself down enough to see the room was empty of all the monsters. Growlers, she called them in her head. The guttural gurgles, combined with smells, seemed to be their language. She softly began to echo the song the child was singing, and the little girl's eyes grew big as she searched the room, craning her neck to see as much as she could. Fran lowered herself half out of the ceiling and reached down, desperate to make sure that the child was real and not another trick of her own mind. One hand cupped against the girl's cheek was all she needed. She gritted her teeth and brought her mind back to the present again, refocusing on the task at hand. She knew that if she got into a rhythm of swing, hit, swing, hit, then her body would take over, and she could spend hours knocking down the stone walls with little thought needed. She let her body lead the way, which was not something she had done well back home on Earth. On Earth, she had been a wife and a mom and a fairly good insurance claims examiner. Not much pick-swinging work involved in processing dental claims. Fran let herself slip through different levels of phase as she worked, aware out of the corner of her eye that the world around her was shifting into different speeds as she worked her way further and further from true here and now. This was the best that this new life got for Fran, when she was destroying the walls and working on controlling and directing her new skills. Being pulled forward had brought with it some new abilities for her. Everyone pulled forward had been outfitted with some sort of weird skin suit that could not be removed. With practice, they could learn to move it around and bundle it into one spot, but it would not come all the way off. Each skin suit seemed to have a main color that stayed constant, with spots of a different color that slowly shifted around the suit. Some visitors just had the suit. Others had the suit, plus the ability to phase through time, while others had skills that allowed them to group people together so one person could bring a whole gang into phase with them. Some visitors had the rare skill of triggering others' skills, and there was also a strange sort of storage skill, nicknamed batteries, that allowed some to store the energy created by phasing within themselves and let it out in a controlled fashion. Fran's mind slipped a bit and then held still, pushing against memories crowding in. She remembered her life before, her family, her daily routine, driving, cooking, working, and her son, her precious, wild-haired, sweet-faced son, her precious, wild-haired, sweet-faced son. The memory of his small face led her to the last thing she wanted to remember. If she let it, the memory would overwhelm her. She had been walking up the stairs to the landing by the bedrooms, and her son was 3 steps above her. She could see so clearly as he turned back to her and paused on the stair, his face lit up in laughter, and then his puzzled look and his reach for her as the black rushed up to cover her and she was falling and standing at the same time somewhere dark and cold until glowing bars of light flared into being. She went over the memory, over and over, trying to remember more, trying to figure out if her son had been pulled forward through time, too. The fear consumed her that he had, that he was somewhere in the levels below her, floor after floor of stone and mold and dark and tech. Was he there? Was he cold, starving, tortured, terrified? What if he had phased and was wandering around lost? What if he was chained in some hidden side room off a labyrinth of stone corridor she had missed during her endless searches? What if he'd moved to another room just before she'd entered the one he'd been in? The only way to be sure was to remove the building, the rooms, the levels, until it was just one big room, one big pit, and then phase through every time she could, looking for him. Part of Fran knew that she'd gone mad, that the pull forward, the fear, the pain, had brought her mind to a place that lacked all reason. The rest of her didn't care. The pick slammed against the rock, sparking and knocking chips off. If he was anywhere here, she would find him. She drove the pick down again and again. The stone shattered. End of chapter 2.
It's not a matter of fault, but the future right
now. Hello again, Pamela here. This section is Q&A for Duck. Over the last year, I have had several groups of beta readers, and these are some things that they've sent in to me. Moving forward, I'll have questions from you folks, and you can send them in to duckhereandnow@gmail.com, and I'll do my best to get them in a future podcast. So here we go. The most common question that I get is, where did you get the idea for Duck? Duck showed up about 5 years ago. I was working on a piece of music, and this mental image of a young girl in an alien cafeteria popped in my head. She's remained pretty much the same over the process of writing the book. I have this rule about ideas. They need to be honored as they show up, when they show up. So I think of them like cafeteria trays in one of those spring-loaded bins, the kind where you take a tray and then the next one pops up, and if you don't take the tray off the top, you can't get the next one in the stack. So my training in education is in music, and I've spent decades honoring whatever creative idea shows up next. It's kind of made for a varied career. But when Duck showed up in her cafeteria, it was one of my more odd ideas. But I did my best to honor it. I tried to do something musically, and that went nowhere. I tried poetry. That didn't work. So I tried prose, and the next thing I knew, I'd written the core of the first chapter. I spent time on Duck here and there over the years, but last November I found the story unfolding much more quickly, and the next thing I knew it was April of this year and I had finished the book. So I don't really know where the idea of Duck came from. I don't know where most of my creative ideas come from. I just know that it's my job to honor them. Okay, question number two. What exactly is phasing? So if you were reading this in a regular book format, you could start right in on chapter two and get more info about phasing, but we're podcasting this week by week, so. Phasing is the ability to shift into a different pace of time. Phase one is faster than time in here and now. Phase two is even faster. Phase three, faster still. And it goes up and up and up and up, and every visitor has a different level they can phase up to. Some visitors can trigger the phasing, some cannot. I think that's enough to get you through to chapter two. Every three levels, the visitor becomes visible or invisible to those in here and now. It's intricate. It gets really, really fun as we move through the book, because when you take this as far as this idea can go, it gets nuts. So anyway, that's a brief phasing explanation. The third most popular question I get is some form of, who on earth are you? Which cracks me up usually. So people read Duck and then they Google me and come up with a bunch of music or web design info and then get, I don't know what the word is that I want to use here, something between peeved and disappointed. Duck is my first book. There's a lot of music out on the interwebs that I've done, though. I'm on Spotify, so if you'd like the song before this Q&A section, do a search for Pamela Zero Living Backwards on Spotify, and you'll get access to an entire CD. I guess I'm like millions of other artists around the world. We earn our living however we can, and we spend our extra time creating. We have families and houses and pets, which reminds me, if you hear a cat or a dog on these Q&As, the cat is Helena, the dog is Titus, and please forgive them. They have a need to be on the podcast somehow. And I'm doing my best to edit out the meows and dropped dog toy sounds, but a few might get through. So to me, Duck is like all art. Art gets created and then the artist spends as much time as energy as needed to get the work out into the world. I can't tell you how happy I am that you are listening to Duck. I really hope you enjoy it. And I would love it if you'd send me an email with your questions and comments. My email is duckhereandnow@gmail.com. And if you do a search on Facebook, you can find a group called Duck Duck Goose. And that's for folks that want to talk about the book and the podcast, and I'll keep an eye out there for questions and comments as well. I think that'll wrap it up for this first podcast. We're coming close to 50 minutes now. Stay well, everyone.